Okay, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to welcome you all to the regular South Dade step meeting. It's the South Dade group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Please join me in a moment of silent meditation, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, let me read from the script here. Parents are reminded they are responsible for their children's behavior. Children are allowed at meetings and holidays only if they are seated quietly with their parents. Please turn your cell phones into a silent mode or turn them off. I think this is a closed meeting. Yeah. This is a closed meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in support of a singleness of purpose. Attendance at closed meetings is limited to persons who have a desire to stop drinking. If you think you have a problem with alcohol, you're welcome to attend this meeting. We ask that when discussing our problems, we confine ourselves to those problems as they relate to alcoholism. Let me see. I already introduced myself. Let me see what else I'm supposed to do. I did that. Are there any newcomers or visitors to the room who would like to identify themselves? Let's start with newcomers. I don't know. What's a newcomer? You got less than 20 years. It's like AA, little AA humor. You know what I mean? Okay. If you got less than, 30 days? Or you just want to identify yourself as a newcomer? Raise your hand. Okay. How about visitors? Yes, sir.
My name is Calvin. I'm an alcoholic visiting from Homestead.
Okay, Calvin. Hey, Deborah. Who else? Yeah, that guy back there with the baseball cap.
Andy, visiting from Carl
Gable. Hey, Andy. Yeah. Hey, Hugo. Is that it? Yeah, Chris, you want to...
Chris from the courtroom.
Okay, Chris. Yes, sir.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Carlos from the courtroom.
Hey, Carlos. Good to see you. Yes. Okay, Whitney. Good to see you. Anybody else? That's it? Okay. A lot of visitors. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, hope with each other they may solve their common problems, help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are, the one thing they changed in 70 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, the one thing they changed in the entire book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's the one thing they changed? They changed that deal. They say the only requirement is a desire to stop drinking. It used to be, look, if you got a big book, look at the first edition. They say the only requirement is an honest desire to stop drinking. You know why they took the word honest out? Because they thought that was like too high a bar. That's the same paragraph where they say what most people don't realize is this is a very serious disease. They thought honest would trip a lot of people up. Am I honest? Am I not honest? You know, that would be enough to keep you out for 3 more years, you know? Just that word. You know, so... The only requirement for membership is, you know, personally, the truth of the matter is I prefer to keep it in because we're getting too many people, you know what I mean? I think, personally, I think it's a qualifier. It should be a qualifier. I mean, I think if you get tripped up over the word honest, let them stay out there for a year or two until they can get, because then the God thing's really going to screw them, you know what I mean? If the honest thing is going to keep, the God thing is just going to pummel them, you know? Let's throw it. I don't think honest is too big of a deal. I want them hurting so bad enough that they can say, I don't know whether I'm honest or not. I'm going into the frickin' room. You know? The only requirement for membership is, that's just my personal opinion. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution does not wish to engage in any controversy. Well, I'm a little controversial, but AA isn't. neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And it's customary in South Florida to read the 12 traditions first and then how it works. Who's got the 12 traditions? Nina?
Yes.
Okay, introduce yourself and then read them, okay?
My name is Nina, I'm an alcoholic.
Nina.
Now, this is the 12 traditions. One, our commonwealth work to come first. Personal recovery pendulum on AA meetings. Two, for a group purposes, but one ultimate authority. A loving God that you may express himself in group conscience. Our leaders are trusted servants, do not govern. Three, the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be anonymous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has one primary purpose, carry the message to an alcohol group or suffer. Six, an AA group under endorse, finance, or lend AA to remove the facilities outside enterprise, plus problems with money, property, and trustees to purchase on a primary purpose. Seven, every AA group must be fully self-supporting, signing up and contributing. Eight, alcohol synonymous to maintain a nine, AA as such must never be organized, but will make great service for the communities directly responsible for those who serve. Ten, alcohol synonymous has no opinion on alcohol issues, and AA will never be launched into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. 12, anonymity is the central foundation of all our decisions, every mind is responsible for corporate personnel.
Okay, now the how it works. There you go.
How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail or clearly follow their path. If you do not recover, people who cannot and will not contribute to themselves to this single program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally capable of being honest with themselves. There are such important. They are not at fault, they seem to have been born. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living that demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are increasing. There are those who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover and have the capacity to be honest. Our story is disclosed in a general way what we used to be like. What happened when we were like now? We decided we won't be having a room to go to anyone to get it, and we were ready to take certain steps. As some of you who bought, we thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. But all your instances are commanded, we begged you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we left the last week. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, there's too much trouble. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures avail us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We have his protection and care with three events. Here are the steps he took with the protection of the program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, their lives to become a man. Two, came to believe that power greater than ourselves could be forced to stand. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless more only toward ourselves. Five, admitted to God for ourselves and another human being the exact nature of our own. Six, entirely ready to have God and involve the people that prepare. Seven, humbly asking for a new work for him. Eight, made a list of all persons who live on and willing to make an answer them all. Nine, we recognize such people when possible, such as these who are linked to the others. Ten, continue to take personal and real long talk with the negative. 11, self prayer and meditation and improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. For an early chronology is worth for us in the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of this step, we try to carry this message to our followers about these principles and our ethics. Many of us exclaim, what an order, I can't go through this. Do not be disturbed. No one among us has been able to maintain anything that focuses on these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to go along spiritual lines. Principally, to step down and guide some progress. We spend spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic should have to be acknowledged in the first one that is born after they appear deeper in the ideas. Maybe we are alcoholics and not men who are alive, but neither probably don't have the power to believe we are alcoholics and see what God is doing on the other side.
Okay, thank you. Let's see what else. I think that's basically it. Okay, we're on step four. I may overshoot it. Who knows what's going to happen here? This is going to be like, anybody have seen the movie Pulp Fiction? You know what? If you've seen that movie, you know it's like starts at the end or in the middle, goes to the beginning, goes, you know. Unless you're paying attention, you're going to miss something, you know. So, I was doing the. I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 17th, 1981, and I've been doing this for a while. And there's a certain perspective you get from being around for a little over 28 years, because I was talking to somebody about this the other day. You know, when you first walk, you know, everybody walks nay with opinions, right? Everybody's got an opinion. And, you know, listen, I've had opinions. My best thinking got me into this place. My best thinking got me in so much trouble. But I got to tell you, when I made all these decisions and judgments in my life before getting here, which resulted in hurting a lot of people, hurting myself, losing my self-esteem, so every decision I made, I'm my greatest fan. You know, when they say... in order to love somebody, you got to love yourself. Hey, what a crock. Ain't nobody loved me like me. Trust me, I'm in love with me. You know what I mean? Now, I know my actions and the things I do. I know you look at me, you know, you look like a Britney Spears or an Elliot Spitzer. Say, that guy must hate himself. But you got to understand, even though it may look like we hate ourselves, there's no question about it that when we do the things we do, it's because we love ourselves more than anybody. All we think about is, all I think about is me. I don't care about anybody but me. My whole life, I can't get rid of me. You know, when I think of doing something, here's what I think. What do I want to do? Everything else, if I want to do something, it don't matter what you want. Somehow I'm going to manipulate it. It's all about me. I'm just crazy about me. And my best thinking on my best days, using my brain power, which is exceedingly unbelievable, because everybody knows alcoholics are brilliant, especially when it comes to them. No, who knows you better than you? I mean, our motto is, you don't understand. I'm different. You know, if you knew the inner workings of my mind, if you knew the little nuances, you'd understand why, you know, my best thinking of my best days put together in such a way so that I would win got me crushed. So I came in here with a lot of opinions, strongly held opinions. And let me tell you something, although for a nanosecond, when I was down on my knees and humbled enough to say, I need help, I can't stop drinking, I was willing for a nanosecond to take direction because I was scared and I didn't want to drink again. So I was willing for a nanosecond to listen to some buffoon who wasn't as smart as I was say things like slippery places and slippery people and all that stuff that you tell new people, so that I could put together like about 3 weeks or a month. Trust me, after about a month or two of not drinking and started feeling a little bit better, having some money. Trust me, all that thinking shit came back. Didn't take me long to start managing, thinking, analyzing, weighing, comparing, deciding, you don't understand, I'm different. Didn't take me long, you know, to do that stuff. If only, yes, butter, that kind of thing. It's amazing that anybody makes it here. This disease is so strong and so resilient. You know, and you don't even know you got it. Because what does it say? It says that the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. And this book is correct. And the one thing we agree on, the only reason Alcoholics Anonymous is around, what separates us from the Rotary Club is this book. That's the only thing that separates us from group therapy, this book. This book says is the one thing we agree on. We don't agree on what I say, what you say, what our brains, we agree on this book. It says we're selfish and self-centered. That's the root of the problem. It says, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. We step on the toes of others, they retaliate. You know, usually we don't think at fault, but when we think back on it, when we really map it down, we see that somehow in the past, we did some crazy, wacko things, hurting people, and the desire to basically please ourselves and what the alcoholic is. So our problems really are of our own making. 99% of our problems... You know, very rarely does an innocent victim walk in this door. The divorces, the jail, 99% of our problems are things we set in motion ourselves, though we usually, because we're an extreme example of self-will. We're going to do whatever the hell we want. Hey, get out of my freaking way. Mind, hey, you know something? I appreciate what you had to say. Why don't you just mind your own flipping business? Hey, how about this? Like, who the hell do you think you are anyway? What right do you think you have telling me anything? Judge. You know what I mean? Hey! Call the cops! Call them! You know? I don't give a crap, you know? And an alcohol is an extreme example of self-will run riot. Now here's the key, here's the good part. Though he usually doesn't think so. Sort of like, he's nuts, but he thinks he's okay. He's nuts. He's insane. But he thinks he's... Michael Jackson was nuts. I mean, I hate to talk about the dead, but I mean, he was nuts. But he thought he was okay. Britney Spears was nuts, thought he was okay. Half the people you see get into trouble that you can't understand why they're crazy. They're absolutely doing crazy things, but they think they're okay. Right up until the time they get caught. And some of them then give up the ghost, but most of them say, no, it's bad breaks and misunderstanding. I'm really okay. You're nuts. I'm nuts. That's what they say in the book. We're insane. We're crazy. But we think we're okay. And you know something? Even if I'm willing to admit, well, maybe I'm a little nuts. You know, here's the sad part about alcoholism. Even if I admit that I'm a little nuts, I don't even have a clue as to how crazy I really am. I don't even have a clue. Because we see through it, because we really don't know. How can you trust this brain? For 15 years, while I crushed people's lives and I formed the instrument that was going to basically decimate me, I'm hanging around every person in my life that's going to hurt me, thinking they're giving me good information, and anybody that would come into my life to try to help me, I would shoo them away using my best thinking, and I wound up in the dirt, hurting a lot of people. And finally, after 15 years, finally the whole thing blows up, and I say at the point of a gun, I need help, I can't stop drinking. And all of a sudden I stop drinking, I'm supposed to trust everything else I'm thinking after that. You know, I'm making all sorts of decisions based upon emotions and all sorts of stuff that I don't even understand. So in any event, I was doing a meeting. So when I was 3 years sober, I started doing these step series. So I've been doing it for like 25 years. One of the interesting things is everybody walks in with opinions. I have my own opinions. Of course, my opinions these days, I'm still an alcoholic. I was telling Nino on the way up there, I says, I'm alcoholic, you know, and not as an excuse, I'm just saying I am. There's no question about it. I still got this thing, you know, and it's just not as noticeable. You know, it's in the little things. I mean, I'll do stuff that's insane, and I'll know it's insane, and I'll say not as an excuse, I'll say, I'm crazy, you know what I mean? But it's not the same kind of insane stuff that I used to do. But I'm in Homestead, Florida when I was, one of the things I'm saying is I still have opinions now. But my opinions now are not so much based upon the 15 years I spent, although that's part of it, drinking and drugging and hanging around with people. They're spent on the 28 years that I've just experienced with my own life, watching what has actually happened to me when I did this versus doing that. When I thought this versus thought, watching exactly how this thing has played out in my life. I mean, watching how it's played out in my life. There's something to say about experience and watching it as it plays out in other people's lives. Because everybody comes out here with opinions. And then 3 years later, they're drunk. And then 10 years later, they're drunk. Because only one half of 1%, 1 in 200 make over 20 years. So everybody feels strongly about a whole bunch of stuff. And you know, the interesting thing about this book is they say it's a big book, and it is a big book. It contains a lot of stuff. But the way we do it, it really becomes a small group. We memorize a couple of phrases, a couple of things we sort of like, and we sort of think we understand, and we think we know the big book. But what happens as you go along in this thing is all of a sudden, you read the same thing over and over again for 15, 20 years, and then and you think you understand. Maybe you don't even see it. Maybe it doesn't even mean anything to you. Maybe you think you know what it means. And then one day, one night, at 3 o'clock in the morning, when you don't have enough money to pay the mortgage, or you found out you had cancer, or you're going through something that you're just sure nobody will understand, you know, and you take this book off the shelf and you turn to a page and you start reading and you see that phrase that you read 3,000 times that meant nothing, then all of a sudden it means everything. You understand it completely. It's the answer. It's the most incredible. He says, and you understand it like you never understood it before. Because what's happened is like a child who's 1 year old grows into clothes that were bought for a 3 year old. All of a sudden, you've grown into what they're talking about in this book. You see, when I came in here, I understood about the drinking. I would read the stuff about the drinking. You know, the jaywalker and all. I said, man, this is me. This is me. This is me. I didn't understand anything about them promises. I didn't understand about 90% of the other stuff, but I just kept on reading the book. I thought I understood. I thought I understood the words new freedom, new, how would I understand the word new freedom, new happiness? I didn't have it. I never experienced. How would I understand? They're talking about old ideas. Unless you get rid of your old ideas, the result is nil unless they let go out. Absolutely. The only thing I could put together after about a year is old ideas must mean don't hang around bars. That's an old idea. The old ideas I understand now, the old thoughts and the old patterns and the old ideas, the stuff that I have to sacrifice now in order to stay sober and have this incredible way of life is so much different. My idea of what that means. I understand now how they say the result was known until they let go. You know, you see a guy with 8 years, 15 years, 20 years, 12 years, who've done step meetings, who've done all the steps, and he's not drinking, and then the next day he's drinking. You understand about old ideas. You understand that old ideas will kill you. You understand that there are people that'll hang on to old ideas, and listen to this, and it'll kill them. And they won't even know they got them. That this isn't just for somebody, these steps and this stuff we're reading is not just for somebody who has 6 months, or 6 weeks, or 6 days, it's for people who have 16 years. You'll understand what they're talking about when they talk about in the big book about settling. You know, and you get to a certain point, and you got the money, and the gal, and this, or whatever it is you got going in your life, and you think what you're going to do is you're going to nail that sobriety to the wall, and you'll say, you know, this is good enough. This is good enough. I got my life back now. And you go on, and you think that's going to do it, and you nail it to the wall, and within a year or two, or maybe you're drunk, and you don't even know why. Because you think you're doing okay. So around 3 years sober, I'm doing these steps. I did a 4-step meeting at the Homestead Club room. It was a different room. It's not there anymore. And I remember it was the worst 4-step meeting I had decided. This has got to be the worst 4th. I don't even know why I thought it was the worst. Yeah. Well, that was at a time in my life. I had read the steps. I'd read the 12-step. Where is it? Having had a spiritual awakening, we tried the character's message out and practice these principles. What I thought it said is that we carried this message. Let me tell you what I thought it said. I don't know why I thought it said this. I just thought it said this. I thought, see, this is an example of growing into this stuff. I thought it said that we carried the message. How many people think that's what it says? That we carried the message? Nobody thinks that's what it says? It's amazing. It shows you how dumb I was. You see, I walked in here. I knew everything. Everything. Now I'm 28 years sober and I know like two things. Maybe one thing. I know one thing. In 28 years, you know what 28 years has done for me? It's gotten me stupid. I used to be smart. I used to know everything. Now all I know is one thing. The good thing for me is it's the one thing I need to know. You know, you can know everything. You can know everything and stay drunk and miserable. You can be brilliant and know everything and stay drunk and miserable, and you can know nothing except for one thing. And stay sober and happy for the rest of your life. So it's lucky that the one thing I know is the only thing I need to know. So I've gotten pretty stupid. You can ask all my sponsees. I must be stupid because they're always telling me I don't understand. So I mean, I can't be too bright about this stuff. So I'm there in the Homestead group and I'm doing a 4-step meeting, and you know, I thought my job was to carry the message, and nobody was laughing. You know, nobody was yucking it up, and it was like an oil painting there, and I wasn't entertaining because I wasn't, you know, nobody was jumping up and down and saying I'm saved, you know. I'll get baptized now, or whatever the heck they were supposed to do. And whatever it is, I didn't get that I didn't feel the love, you know what I mean? You know how sensitive alcoholics are to rejection. You know, if you're an alcoholic, you're a rejectaholic. You're an acceptaholic. You'll do anything. You'll prostitute yourself. You'll sell your daughter. You'll do anything just so somebody says, I love you. You know, Marlon Brando said, if I walk into a party and there's 300 people, one doesn't like me, I got to leave. Alcoholics, it doesn't matter. I'm in Toronto speaking to 3,000 people on a Sunday at the Toronto Regional Convention like 10, 15 years ago. And there's 3,000 people and I'm getting to the end of my talk. Talk for an hour. I get to the end of the talk and in the back of the room, I see a guy leave. I saw him leave. There's 3,000 people looking at me. I saw this guy. I watched him get up and leave. I continued my talk. I'm thinking, why did he leave? What did I say? You know, for all I know, his guy's wife was giving birth to triplets, and he shouldn't have even been there. And he was just so enthused, you know. But he said, "I better leave." I'm saying, "What did I say?" As we're driving me to the airport, the two guys are saying, "You know, that was a great talk. We really liked it." I'm thinking to myself, "I don't understand why that guy left." You know what I mean? Sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. But you know, we can't. That's why alcoholics. Who crush their lives and destroy their lives and listen. You know, this disease is not about alcohol. Nobody in AA has a drinking problem. Nobody in AA has a drinking problem. Nobody here, this isn't for drinking. You know, you want to stop drinking, you need to go out there and drink. You got a drink problem, you need to drink. Trust me. Trust me. I know this, I know about this disease. The two rules here are, in order to get here, you got to drink. And once you get here, you're supposed to stop. Now, if you got a problem with that stopping thing, you need to go out and drink. You really need to, don't rob an alcoholic of his debt. You know what they used to say in the 12 and 12? Here's what they used to say. They say, we don't argue with an alcoholic. We let John Barleycorn, that's alcohol, do our, listen, the worst that'll happen is they'll die, and you know, alcoholics are about as common as dirt. You know what I mean? You know, so it's not like you're gonna, like you're, you know, we're the guys that get into accidents, kill a family of four, and walk away. Believe me, you know, you're not hurting the world if an alcoholic dies. I know we think we're pretty cool. I know we think we're pretty cool, but trust me, check the DUI laws and the rest of the United States. The rest of the United States doesn't think the death of an alcoholic is a big deal at all. You know what I mean? Like normal people think it's probably a good thing. You know? I know we don't like, it hurts your feelings. I don't want to hurt your feelings, but we hurt people, you know? So the bottom line is I'm there and, you know, watch an alcoholic. He gets sober, he comes in here and they ask, these are the questions they ask. This is what an alcoholic asks. Well, if somebody asked, you know, listen, you just almost poisoned yourself and killed yourself with alcohol. You've lost your wife, you've lost your kids, you've lost your self-respect. You spent $30,000 on a treatment center. Your life is in the toilet. And the one thing you're told is if you don't stop drinking, you're going to die. And this is the question an alcoholic asks. Well, if I go to a party and somebody asks me, will I have a drink? What should I say? This is like people over the age of 18 that have a fucking brain. You understand what I'm saying? And they're sober when they're asking this. They're not drunk. They've just been through treatment. Now, let me tell you what they're really saying when an alcoholic says things. And this is why it's so important to understand the four step and understand exactly where you're coming from. Because we do things and we act upon things and we say things and we feel things and we lie to ourselves. We all have a story. Well, let me tell you my story. We got a story. And you know something? For 15, 20, 25, 30, 40 years, as long as you've been on the planet, you've been operating a certain way, and you've been lying to yourself. You don't know you're lying to yourself. You've got a story. You've got a rationalization as to why you do the things you do. You know, he made me do it. Well, he made me feel it. Well, he hurt my feelings. Well, he did it. You've got a story to cover everything that you believe. Now, it's not the truth, but you know, it's good enough for you. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And because you believe the shit you tell yourself, which arises from some insane place where the real committee's meeting, you know, the executive committee, not the committee that's, I know the committee you guys are thinking about, where you're invited to the meetings. You're thinking about like the General Assembly, where the million voices and they're all talking about you and everything. No. That's not the committee you got to worry about. That committee, you come in here and say, I got the committee going and everything. You know what they're saying and what they're doing and you can see it. The committee you guys got to worry about is the Security Council meeting. The secret double probation. You know, remember that, what was that movie, Animal House? You're on secret double probation. You don't even know you're on probation. The committee you got to worry about is the committee that's in your brain that's meeting and trying to devise how to kill you, and they're not telling you the plan. You're not in on the plan. You know, Carl Menninger wrote a book in 1935 called Man Against Himself, and the chapter on alcoholism, he says, alcoholics are men and women out to destroy themselves. Sober. And then you find out that the problem isn't even alcohol. It says alcohol is but a symptom of our disease. The real disease centers in our mind, not our body. We drink alcohol because we can't stand being sober. Men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, discontented, sober. Unless again, experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by drinking, taking a few drinks. So, you know, unless you understand how sick you really are, as well, you know, sometimes, this is how bad it gets. Sometimes, see, here's what alcoholics think. They think that if they feel good, that means they're well. And if they feel bad, that means there's a problem because they can't stand feeling bad. Just like they can't stand. And sometimes you're doing your best thinking and your best behavior and you're at your best when you're feeling horrible. And sometimes you're at your worst when you're feeling great. I mean, your mind tells you all sorts of things. So an alcoholic says, what'll I say if they ask me whether I want to drink? And this is what an alcoholic's really saying when they ask that. Because a normal person knows the answer. The answer is like, no thank you. They understand that. What an alcoholic's saying, now they don't know they're saying, and they're very interested, they're listening to the answer. They're saying, tell me what I can say to these people when they ask me whether I want to drink, because I want to say the right thing, because I don't want them not to like me, or think that I'm not cool, or not okay, so I gotta say the right thing, because if you can't allow me to say the thing, or tell me the thing I can say, so that I can still be part of the group and they'll still love me, I'm gonna have to drink and destroy myself, because I would rather drink and destroy myself, and flush my kids down the toilet, than risk the possibility that some asshole might not like me. Because that's how crappy I feel about myself. And that even though I think I'm the greatest thing since Swiss cheese, deep down somewhere inside, I know I'm a piece of crap. So that's what the alcoholics really, now they don't know they're saying that. And if you tell them they're saying that, they'll like fight you over that. But that's the motive. That's what's going on with that deal. Now listen to me. When you have somebody who's a man or who's a woman, whatever it is, who's 50 years old, 40 years old, 30 years old, and they're talking like that, and they're asking those questions, and they're worrying about that, they're going to sleep worrying about that, waking up worrying about that, and that's the motivation, and that's what's going on, and they don't even know that's what's going on, but they just know they're worried about it, and they want to know the answer, and that's what's driving them. That's not a person that's going to be incredibly successful in life. And they're going to fail, because they're going to make all sorts of, and that's just like one small little thing. And 99% of the stuff comes from bad crap like that, that we don't even know of. You know, we're just flying the plane, we're flying blind. So I'm doing this meeting, and I thought, well, our job was to carry the message. And in Homestead, the Homestead meeting, remember? You got to follow me. It's like you got to keep up. You go back and forth. So, you know, that's what I thought. And so I'm talking about the four steps, sort of like this meeting. You know, nobody's getting anything. You know, and I don't even know what I'm saying. And you know, I'm saying, well, this has got to be the worst four step deal. Except the only difference is like I back then, I actually cared whether you liked me and stuff. But I mean, that's a whole other story. I'm going to get to that later. So in any event, you know, it says fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave you. You know, so that fear of people thing, you know, and whether they like you, they don't like you, anything like, you know, what would be even better if no matter whether they liked you, if you liked yourself, I think that'd be a better deal. You know what I mean? As a matter of fact, I think if everybody likes you, you're probably not saying much. You know, you want to piss off at least 10% of the people, 10 to 15%, because then at least you're saying something. So I'm doing this meeting, so I'm, you know, not feeling like I'm getting across or something. So I walk out the door, and of course, I'm doing what all alcoholics do. You guys ever overthink shit? You know, I mean, I'm thinking about, what did I say? What did I do? I should have said this. I should have said that. I'm thinking, you know, oh, there's a terrible meeting. They didn't like me. I'm not going to come back. You know, I'm embarrassed. You know, whatever it is, I'm thinking about, now, of course, I'm going to go back. And when I say, of course, I'm going to go back, I'm an excuseaholic because I'm an alcoholic. You know, I'll make an excuse every day of the week, but I had a sponsor. I was plugged in. I've been sold on the book. You know, like when you make an excuse, you know, once I knew that part of not drink. See, the one thing I had going for me, more than anything else, is there was a lot of crap I had to do in AA that I didn't want to do. As a matter of fact, 90% of the stuff that they had me do in AA, I didn't want to do. But the reason why they had me locked in, and I made this because more than anything else, I didn't want to drink. So you see, they would tell me, we're going down to Bark, or we're going down to detox, or you're going to make coffee, you're going to do that. And somehow they had me bullshitted into believing. My sponsor had, I don't know how it was, that my sobriety or staying sober had something to do with listening to a sponsor, having a sponsor, and following directions. So even though I might argue or try to get out of it or think differently, I would always end up doing the thing. And then somewhere down the road, I'd end up doing the thing, I'd get a payback, a payoff. It would work, something would happen, and I'd become a believer. But if I'd become a believer because of the experience. Because it's the experience that's more important. It's the 28 years experience, it's the experiences I've had more than the thinking. The thinking will get you trouble, you know, and my sponsor used to say, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, the man with the money will walk away with an experience. It's going through the crap and coming out the other end, not your opinion. So I'd like to think my opinion these days is based upon 20 years of experience and watching other people fall down. You know, I mean, I wish I had a dollar for every guy who said, I used to hate you, but now I love you. I went to a meeting once, I couldn't stand what you said, but you know, I slipped and I slid and I haven't had a drink and you know, I love you. You know, I mean, I watch the experience, you watch this thing play out. The truth stays sober, and not only does it stay physically sober, it becomes emotionally sober and spiritually sober. Bill Wilson said that's the next deal. You know, that what sobriety, what this disease is really about is unhealthy dependencies. Dependencies upon people, dependencies upon everything. You know what you're dependent upon? I'm going to tell you right now what you're dependent upon. I happen to know what you're dependent upon. You want to know what it is? It's not the alcohol anymore. You know what your problem is? Everything else you think about. What's your problem with it? Your problem is that everything you think about, you're addicted to. The men, the women, the job, the money. You can't stop thinking about it. You know, if you're talking or complaining about something, it has to do with that deal. It has to do with that thing. You know why your life is crappy now? Because of that thing. That thing you think about. You know something? And that thing you think about, that you're upset about, that you worry about, I'll bet you it's the same thing almost all the time. I think it's just like one of these deals. Man, it's happened to me again. When is this crap going to go away? You know, this is the only life you have. And you're blowing it. You're flushing it down the toilet. You weren't about that horse shit. And here's the problem. You don't know how to stop. You can't stop. You know, it says in the book, it says you can't. You say, you know what it says in the book? It says we must get rid of it or it kills us. It says God makes that possible. We don't even know how to do that deal. And I can't even tell you how to do that deal. You're going to have to hang around long enough to figure that deal out. I'm not even sure you can figure it out. I don't even know whether it comes from the intellect. You know, we have a story in the book where Roland has it. He said, now knowing the inner workings of his mind, he was convinced that drinking was impossible. Nevertheless, in 3 weeks, he was drinking. Has to do with something else. It's another deal. May have something to do with this third step thing where it says we thought well before taking the step, making sure we were ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Must have something to do with him. See what your relationship with him is writing. Great events will come to pass for you and countless others. I think at the end of the promise, it says he is doing for us. Whoever he is, better figure out who he is. Because he's the guy. You better figure out that deal. It says right here, it says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed, being all powerful. He gave us everything we need if we stayed close to him and did his work well. So, I left the Homestead Group. I'm not going to go back there again. But in any event, so I was going to say, I was going to come because it was a terrible meeting. I did a terrible meeting. I was like embarrassed. It's like sensitive. So, what happened is, but I came back the next week. I came back, you know, like God willing, if I'm not dead, unfortunately for you guys, I'll probably come back next week. No matter how bad this meeting is. So I came back, and I'm at the podium, and it's the same size room, so like, and before I start, some guy comes up to me, and this is what he says to me. Now, since this time, this has happened to me 1,000 times. I'll tell you what happened in Bali, but I was in Bali, Indonesia, giving the talk, and the same deal. Guy comes up to me, he says this, he says, can I talk to you for a second? I said, sure. He says, I gotta tell you something, that talk you did last week? He says, yeah. He says, you saved my life. I thought it was the worst. You know, you remember Doc, you know when Bill Wilson was 12-stepped by Ebby Thatcher, and he walks in there, he says, I got religion, and Bill Wilson says, well, there's enough booze for me, and he drinks the booze and everything like that, all that deal. You know, when Ebby left, Bill was drinking. Ebby Thatcher probably thought, well, man, that was a waste of time. And because of that 12-step, because of that deal, we're sober. It was probably the most important 12-step. It was probably the most important, but because you don't know what you don't know. And so this guy says, you saved my life. I said, really? He says, yeah. He says, when you said the chicken was on the roof, he says, I was going to kill myself. I was going to commit suicide. I was going to drink. And, you know, I decided, well, rather than do that, I'll go to one last meeting. And I sat in the back and said, well, maybe this, you know, you ever go to a meeting and you say, maybe this guy, maybe this guy, maybe this meeting, maybe this guy has the answer, you know? So I sat there. You know, Bill Wilson says, when we want him enough, God appears. When the pupil's ready, the teacher shows up. Doesn't even have to do with me. It has to do with wanting something bad. So he showed up in the back of the room. He says, I was going to drink and everything. He says, when you said the chicken was on the roof, all of a sudden the whole thing came clear to me. I still was going, the whole thing, you know, thing that was bothering, whatever the heck it is, you know. And I listened to what he said. And he says, the only problem was, of course, is I had never said chicken on the roof. Now, don't get me wrong. I was talking poultry. I remember that. You know, there was a little poultry in there, but it wasn't chicken. He had gotten it wrong. It wasn't chicken on the roof. It was turkey in the basement. You know what I mean? Now, I didn't tell, even in 3 years, I was smart enough to say, no, you didn't. I didn't say you got it wrong. I didn't argue with him. I said, oh yeah, chicken on the roof. I always say that stuff, you know? It's my motto, chicken on the roof, you know? But you know what I understood then? I understood that, you know, this thing's so magical. There's 50 people in here, there's 50 different meetings going on. There's 50 different people saying, thinking 50, hearing 50 different things. Some of them are actually the things I'm saying. You know, and who knows what's going on when it mixes up with your brain. And I, and this guy sits in the back of the room, and he's dying. And he needs to hear the answer. An answer. And I come out with turkey in the basement. And it floats across the room, turkey in the basement. And it gets to his ear. And God knows exactly what this guy needs in his heart. He knows he needs chicken on the roof. And it goes into his ear, turkey in the basement. And all of a sudden he hears chicken on the roof. And God does what God does best. And I get the credit. And you know what? That day I sort of thought about it. I said, man, here I was, thought it was the worst meeting in the world. I saved this. It was this guy's meeting. It wasn't even for the rest of me. It was for that guy. Saved that guy's life. And it wasn't even me. I can't even take credit for it because he didn't even hear what I said. He heard something, you know? And then I noticed, I said, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message. There's a word there. It says tried. You know what that means? That means this could be the worst meeting I've ever done in the history of my sobriety, but it's the best meeting I could do tonight. All I got to do is show up and try, and it doesn't even have to do with anything I say. It has to do with God and what He's doing in this group and with each single person. It has to do with you. It has to do with Him. It has to do with that power. It says there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find Him now. It has to do with those three things. You can't manage your own life. No human power could have relieved your alcoholism. Only God could and would if He was sought. It has to do with my talking, my trying, your listening, God helping, the whole thing. That's how it works. And so here it is. I'm like nuts. And I don't even know how to get out of it because it says in the big book. It says right here. And now I've already done the third step. So now, unless I'm full of shit, which is possible, because you grow into it, now all of a sudden, I've done that deal. I've said that prayer. I've turned my life over. Now I snatch it back immediately afterwards because my faith is small at that point. But it's enough so that I did it. It's enough faith so even though I know it's bullshit, even though I know it's not, there's no God, even though I'm not having an idea what my higher power is, even though I know there's a higher power, but man, I'll tell you something. Yeah, but what do you do when you have real problems like money or something like that? Even though I'm still worshiping money and things, and I know for sure that God is okay and God's the right way, but if I had $1 million, everything would be okay. Even though it's like a bullshit sort of God thing, it's enough faith. It's a small enough faith. So I said, you know something? I'm going to do it anyway. Just in case. Or maybe is, or could happen, so I get down on my knees and I did that deal. And I say that prayer. And then we come over to this where it says selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, step on the toes of others, they retaliate, sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but invariably find that sometime in the past, made decisions based on self, placed us in a position to be hurt now. I've read this, but I'm going to say it again. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcohol is an extreme example. Self will run riot, but we use it as other things. So above everything, the alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. We must. How do you get rid of the fact that you're always thinking about yourself? How do you get rid of the fact that it's always about you? That even when you're thinking about somebody else, you're thinking about somebody else as it pertains to you. Even when you're getting mad about Afghanistan, you know what it says here? We must or it kills us. It says God makes that possible. You know, I wish just saying that made it happen. Wouldn't it be great if just saying that made it, you said God makes that possible. Then all of a sudden, you're not thinking about yourself anymore. But you know what happens? You read it, you pray about it, you go to a room, then you get into the car, then what happens? You start driving, and there you go, you're thinking about yourself. You think about him, or her, or it, or this, or that, or worried, or fearful, or whatever. So you turn on the radio. Why? So you can be distracted. You turn on the TV, you get on the phone, you become a phoneaholic, you talk, you connect, you do anything to keep you quiet. Because the last thing you want is silence. The last thing you want is silence, because then you're alone with your thoughts, and my thoughts were bad thoughts about myself and other people. And you don't even know how to escape that crap or even explain it to other people. How do you explain to other people, listen, here's the problem. I know I'm not drinking, but I'm crazy. But I'm crazy. What are you crazy? I can't even explain how I'm crazy. I'm just crazy. I just feel crappy. I feel crappy for no reason whatsoever. I mean, I'm projecting this. I'm thinking that. I'm doing this. And you walk up to some stupid guy in the room. He says, well, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. Well, what the hell does that mean? You don't even understand what that shit means. And you know, someday you get to be around 10 years or 15 years sober, and all of a sudden 15 years sober, you've said it so much to other people, you're exactly, you know, guys says, well, you're three, well, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. He says, what is it? You know what it means. Because you know exactly what it means. Because when you had 3 years, you were out like that. When you had 5 years, you were like that. When you were a teenager, you were like that. So you say, hey, do you feel like this? You feel like killing yourself? You feel like you want to, yeah. He says, well, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. You understand it. He doesn't understand it because he hasn't been through it. And so a lot of this stuff is experiential. You can't get it by the intellect. You have to go through the experience. You got to go through the suffering. You know, they say that suffering, we learn the value of suffering. You got to go through the deal. And so then they have this way of mapped out in the book, which I'm not going to go through, called the four step, the inventory step. You know, they talk about this in the 10th step, but the spiritual axiom in AA is whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the problem, there's something wrong with you. Now, I know you think, no, you don't understand. There's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with her. You know, it's not my fault. Bad breaks and misunderstandings. It wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for him, but there's something wrong with you. You know, until I get to the point where I can shed light on that deal, until I can open up that deal, you know, some of the sunlight of the Spirit, God's still not going to come into me. I'm still going to be blocked off. And, you know, if I'm blocked off, I'm still going to be thinking the way I'm thinking all that crap, and it's going to kill me. You know, it says after we do the fourth step, it says in chapter 6, and into action, it says this. It says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path, because the book says that's what it's all about. It's about a relationship with your Creator. God makes that possible. It's about coming into a relationship with Him so that you're transformed by the Spirit. You know, who can explain how a person who's a drunk, who's always thinking about himself, and have 28 years and have a different deal going on altogether. It can't be explained by I just got smarter. Because when I was smarter, I was deadly. And I was drunk. It has nothing to do with smarts. It has nothing to do with brains. The smart ones bounce out of here. They're too smart for Alcoholics Anonymous. They know too much. You know why? Because you know what it says? It says right here. It says, what's the first thing? It says, first of all, it says right here, we had to quit playing God. When you're telling me, at 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, well, you know everything, well, you don't understand, well, I'm different, well, I figure this, all you're telling me is you want to play God. So about honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, all you're telling me is you're not willing. You're not open-minded. If you think you're smarter than anybody else, you think you're smarter than this book, you're going to forget. All you're saying is you're not willing to stop playing God. You're going to manage your own life. I'm going to let you do it. says, we have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is, and we have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. We've got to somehow draw that curtain aside and see how sick we really are. Not that in one sitting or in one four-step or in one inventory step, it's all going to become clear. And we're going to see anything. You know something? We may do that. We may see three or four things, or one or two things, or get a couple of ahas, or just enough to get some relief. And it might be 10 years late. Listen, I got stuff going on in my life now at 28 years. You don't catch shit in AA. You don't come in here and catch crap. You know, if you're 10 or if you're 28 years sober, or 15 years sober, 3 years sober, and you're going through a problem, this isn't a problem like you caught in AA. Like you came into AA and you were sitting next to a guy who was selfish and self-centered and spent more money than he made, and all of a sudden you became like that. Because you caught it like a, you know, listen, every problem I have in my life, every defect of character I have in my life, every behavioral defect, every crazy way of thinking, I walked in the doors of AA with it. And I got stuff going on in my life that I'm dealing with right now. You're not dealing with, this is stuff I'm dealing with. That I had 28 years ago, and I that didn't seem to bother me. I didn't even know I had it. I never even thought about it. And today at 28 years, it's like eating my lunch. And that's how you're going to deal with stuff. You're dealing with something now. You know something? Whatever you're dealing with now, you're going to stop. You want something? You're going to have the answer. You're going to get over it. You're going to be wonderful. It's going to be great. You're going to be helping other people how to not get over it. And then you know what you're going to be doing? Dealing with something else. So where did that come from? Some other old ideas that you wrapped your life around, that you depended upon, that you thought this was the answer and everything like that, and all of a sudden something's going to happen, God's going to rip the thing out of that deal, that thing's going to be knocked down, the job, the thing, whatever it is you thought that this is the deal and this is the thing, it's going to be cast away, and it's not going to be about the booze, it's going to be about the fear. It's going to be about the worry, it's going to be about the sucking the thumb and the thumb-sucking crybaby, and how do I get through this, and blah, 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 and finally coming to a realization that you even have to sacrifice to give up that and turn that over to him, because he wants your full attention. You know, there's only one thing you got to know in Alcoholics Anonymous. Once you know that one thing, everything else gets a little easier. If you don't know that one thing, then it becomes real difficult, because you're addicted to all that other stuff, and all that other stuff is impermanent, and it never satisfies. So one day I'm driving with my sponsor in the car, and I was about 9 months sober, and we were picking up Bobby, a guy named Bobby Stearns, and he was a littermate of mine. I picked up a white chip. I never picked up another chip after that. I mean, never drank after that, you know, through the grace of God. And Bobby Stearns was one of these guys, he'd pick up a chip, and then 30 days later, he'd drink. He'd pick up a chip, and then 30 days later, he'd drink. Pick up a chip, and then 30 days later, he'd drink. He'd do it over and over and over again. And every time he'd do it, he'd say, well, this day, it's good. You know, he'd say things. You ever hear somebody say, let's get into that time again? What time? 90 days, always drinking 90 days. It's almost like a countdown. You know what I mean? Bobby was like that. He was sincere. He wanted it, but every 30 days, you know, and Bob, we'd pick him up from Bark. We'd put him in the car. Bob, my sponsor, would take Bobby down, give him a new suit, new pair of clothes, give him a job, take him to meetings, you know, and Bobby would be good for 30 days and then be off to the races again. We'd pick him up again. We're doing this too. And I'm watching this. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm stark raving sober. I'm watching. And you know something? This is pissing me off. It's pissing me off. Not about me, of course. Has nothing to do with me. What does that have to do with me? You know, I'm doing the program right. I'm doing the program the way it should be doing. You know? I'm sincere. It has to do with this son of a bitch screwing around with my sponsor. Who does he think he is? Such a phony baloney, you know? I mean, it's not like I wasn't upset. You understand what I'm saying? And then I was watching out for my sponsor. This was very unselfish. You know? So you're laughing. You don't understand. I was like a saint. And my sponsor, he had like 15, 20 years. He didn't know he was stupid. This guy was pulling the wool. I knew he was a phony. My sponsor didn't know. You know, he was wasting his time and everything. Why couldn't he be like me? I was sincere. You know what I mean? And humble. Sincerely humble. You're a rough crowd. So we're driving, and all of a sudden I turn to my sponsor. I says, you know, we shouldn't even pick up this guy. He says, what? He says, we shouldn't even pick him up. He says, this guy is a phony. And I start on him. I'm a trial attorney. I had my closing argument all worked out. Mm-hmm. Used car salesman, he didn't have a chance. And I had like 3x5 cards. I was naming dates, times. You know, he promised this time, he promised that time, he promised this time, he promised that guy. This guy doesn't give a shit about you. He doesn't care crap about me. He doesn't care about anybody. All he cares about is himself. He's a phony baloney, and we shouldn't even pick him up. And you know something, you're crazy to do it. You know something? Because he doesn't care about you, and he's gonna drink again. He's just wasting your money. It's just a bunch of crap. We gotta turn around and just leave him there and the heck with him. You know what I mean? And after I repeated that about 10 times, because you know how these are. Once it's not enough, you gotta keep on talking. And then I stopped, because you know what it is? It's like a freight train. You ever have one of these deals? You have a power-driven argument, and then you stop talking, but it's like the brain is, it takes time for like the brain to like slow down, you know? And so my sponsor looks at me. Calm as could be, and he says, he couldn't answer me. I was so right, I was Alky right. You know what Alky right is? Like, if you disagree with me, you must die. Because you're just so stupid, you know? And you should be killed, because stupid people shouldn't be alive. What could he say? I was right, I had the facts, I was absolutely, logically right. Logic. Absolute, it was like locked down, there was nothing he could say. And I said, and that's it, so he just waited about a minute, and he says, and then finally he says, Russell. I said, what? He said, Russell. He says, what? I says, are you calm? He said something like, are you calm down? Are you okay? He says, yeah. I says, you sure? He says, Russell, listen to me. Listen to me. He says, what? He says, are you listening? He says, yeah, I'm listening. What? He says, listen. It doesn't bother me the way it bothers you. How can it not bother you? You know what I mean? And you know, here's the problem. I wanted everything he had, and he wanted nothing I had. See, I killed him with logic. He killed me with magic. That's the. He could go through life, and he was unbothered. He was unbothered. You know, he's the guy, same guy who said to me at 5 years, he says, Russ, he says, you know, you could be right or you could be happy. Which one do you want to be? You got to make a choice. He says, I want them both. He says, you can't have them both. He says, what do you mean I can't have them both? I should be able to have them, you know. He says, you know, if you have to be right, then, you know, you're going to be constantly on the defense or the offense. You always have that last word. And you know something? And you got to win. And you have to win. You have to always win. Now you can be, now you have a choice. You can be right. You can be happy. He says, well, I want both, you know. And, you know, at 10 years, I started considering that deal. You know, at around 12 or 13 years, I started thinking, you know, considering the fact that this is beyond my only life and I was tired of being miserable, that maybe it might not be a bad idea to be happy. And maybe around 20 years, I decided I wanted to be happy. I just made the decision. I decided I just want to be happy. You know, I don't want to be right anymore. And all of a sudden, I stopped arguing with people. I just stopped the arguing. You know, and everything changed. Something that told me at 5 years that I didn't understand that 20 years made all the sense in the world. And I had to put in every nickel of that 20 years in order to get to that place. Because I was so addicted to right. I was so addicted, you don't say, so addicted to me and right and my brain and my logic. You know? That's made all the difference. You know, you got all sorts of different sobrieties in here, types of sobriety in here. You know? I like the one they talk about in the 12th step where they talk about the joy of living. That kind of deal. So, you know, you start working these steps, you know, doing this stuff, you know, with the help of God. It works out pretty good. It's a transformation. So thank you very much. Okay, in South Florida, we have a chip system. What is the one thing? What's the one thing? Well, you know something? Here's the problem with the one thing.